Congratulations!
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the base number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
Okay, Maysoon, I have a correction or an apology.
Oh, no.
I want to redact something from the last episode. I have been looking at the work of Kandinsky, and I actually really like it. Last week, I said, fuck Kandinsky.
Oh.
And now I'm on board with Kandinsky.
Okay, good for you.
I'm team Kandinsky all the way.
I'm happy we...
There's some great stuff that he made.
Cool.
Thank you, Kandinsky.
Go, Kandinsky. Good job.
Okay. Before we get to abstraction and our 10-week course in understanding abstraction and becoming abstract.
Becoming abstraction.
Yes. I wanted to put it out there that I went to the MFA show, the UC Berkeley MFA show there at the Berkeley Museum. I got to say, I zeroed in on Hector Munoz Guzman, who we've had on the show.
Yeah.
His work was incredible. It was just one big painting.
One gigantic.
Really
painting.
Huge.
Cool. Yeah.
And he's working, you know, the same stuff he was working on before about his family and Berkeley and the Mexican diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then I also went to a show over there at Adobe Books. Mm-hmm. They have this fucking...
At Adobe Books?
Yeah, they've got about 700,000 artists in this show. It's like hung to
the like
brim.
The pieces are like post-it size?
There are some tiny ones. Sarah Hotchkiss had a piece in there that I really enjoyed. Talk about abstraction, abstract painting. Craig
Geometric.
Calderwood was also in there. Shout out to Craig Calderwood. She just finished up a mural at SF MoMA that I believe it can be seen right now. I think I'm pretty sure it's on the fifth floor. And
Is that like a wall show or something?
Yeah, it's a big mural. Mm-hmm. It's where they have like local artists do murals and stuff.
On the fifth floor?
On the fifth floor over by the cafe. You know where you go to the cafe? There's like a hallway kind of.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Check it out. It looks extremely...
I feel like they should stop using that hallway.
And put it in a more like visible spot.
I just feel like that hallway was more active when they had things going on in the white cube.
Oh yeah.
Down below.
Right.
Like it was a more active space because you could see what was happening in there. You know, now it's just sort of like a walkway to the museum or to the restaurant.
Yeah. But this mural's gonna be killer.
The mural is certainly killer. I just wish they... I wish it was in a more visible location.
Yeah.
And yeah. Why not? Like, why not put it on the second floor right outside the cafe where they've had other wall murals?
Yeah.
Like Leah Rosenberg had a piece there. Yeah. It's quite a large wall. It's super visible.
Leah Rosenberg abstract.
Abstract.
Mm-hmm.
Color field.
Yep. Color's really important
Colors.
There.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's what's going on. Anything you want to report?
Didn't you go to a show at ATA?
Oh, yes, I did.
I walked by that show.
Conrad Guevara curated the right window over there at Artist Television Access. I want to say the left window is also spectacular.
I was going to say that. The left window was kind of wild.
Who was that artist?
I don't know. I don't think there was. They usually have some kind of signage up.
Yeah, I didn't see it either. But the artist that...
I loved like... Oh, yeah. You're talking about right window? Talk about right window.
Yes. The right window... Gosh, I can't find the damn name of this freaking artist.
They made you do the QR... I think we need to stop using QR codes.
You think it's the QR codes that are getting us?
I think people will use QR codes for nefarious reasons, and if they're not already.
What the hell?
And I think we need as a community to stop using them.
Damn. Okay. Why?
Imagine when you click on someone sends you a link and all of a sudden it's a bad link and it has access to your phone.
Downloading viruses.
I think the same thing will happen with QR codes if it's not already happening.
We got to get rid of these QR codes.
So I just feel like we need to become less okay with using our phones that way.
Yes.
Like if everyone's doing it, then that's when it becomes dangerous. I feel like that's when people are like, great, now we can take advantage. Everyone is used to this technology. We can kind of infiltrate it.
Yes. It's like how have you ever seen these things, skimmers? Where they put a thing on top of a credit card reader so that they're getting your credit card information.
What does it look like?
It looks like the same as whatever the credit, like they'll put them at gas stations and stuff. It looks like a normal thing, like the normal spot where you would scan your card or whatever.
Well, what are you supposed to do? Not use your card?
You just got to be looking out.
But you said it looks normal.
I know, but you got to kind of look and see. And then if you can like rip it off. Then you know it's fake.
So this is probably less in businesses. Like it's not going to be at like Pete's Coffee or someone's small shop.
No, because
that's going to make the gas station is like outside
it's not
in
surveilled.
The public. Right?
Yeah, it's
or it's
easy,
surveilled, but
sure. But you can just slap it on there. You just slap it on.
Okay, good. Okay, to know.
So that's what we've got. The name of the fucking artist in Right Window is Eric.
Eric.
But I can't remember his last name.
Okay.
I want to apologize to Eric. Your work was great. It was, some of it was abstract. It was basically light boxes where he's painted on the surface.
So when I walked by, the light boxes weren't plugged in, and it was, granted, still light out.
Yeah.
But I felt like I was missing a key.
You got to have a element
of the work to not, even though it wasn't dark outside yet, I think the light box still needs to be plugged in.
For sure.
In order to see the work.
100%.
So that kind of annoyed me about that particular show. So
I saw it all plugged in and plugged in.
Yeah, I assume so. It was opening.
I give it a 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
When it's plugged in, 10 out of 10. Unplugged, I don't know.
Yeah.
But thank you, Conrad. It was a great opening. It's very tight in there.
Were you inside?
I'm really in his face. Yeah.
That space is tricky. Conrad, call in if you want to chat with us about that, because I feel like you really need to curate that space to just be seen from the street.
For sure.
Because it's never open otherwise. Like, right. Do they just open it for regular gallery hours or when ATA is open? Can you go in there? I've never gone in there.
Yeah, you can. I think there's times when you can go in there and mill around.
Mill around. Okay.
But I want to go ahead and give everybody the opportunity to weigh in. And so you can give us a call, 419-351-6606, or you can email us. Congratulations, pinetree@proton.me. Shout out to Bobble Rob, who sent us an excellent video that I'm going to put in the underworld. So check that out. It's like very, I think these are students in England at some like Kingston College or something like that, did this incredible video about their like encampment and like pro-Palestine activism that they've been doing there. It's very creative, very cool.
Ooh, love that.
Don't fact check me on any of the name. No, I know. But to the listener,
okay,
don't fact check me on anything I'm saying, have said, or am about to say.
This is an art project. Also, don't ever forget.
Yes, parody satire. The other thing I want to say is thank you to Jim Prosser and Anonymous, our sustaining donors. And if you want to go ahead and donate to us, you can go to congratulationspinetree.com and smash that donate button.
The smash. It's so weird.
Guys, would you donate more if we just put our Venmo out? If you want to Venmo us, my Venmo is @KateCashGrab.
What's the image you use, Kate?
I think it's just my face.
Okay, so we all know what that looks like.
Is it my face? Okay, Maysoon, now it's time for us to get in back into abstraction.
This is our abstract corner.
This is week two of our 10-week abstraction deep dive. We're going to get a Pulitzer Prize for this.
I don't know about that. And I... Well, I don't know, because it's just going to be like us talking about our feelings and our thoughts.
Well, I have some solid, hard facts today.
Well, yeah, but we're not just talking about facts. Wasn't that the point?
I got facts. I got history. I got it all.
No. Well, how do we want to start? I want to say that I did not look at the paint. First of all, we were looking at Helen Frankenthaler's Mountains and Sky. Mountains and Sea from 1952.
Yes.
And... should we just give a quick... do we need a quick... No, we're going to describe it. I looked at it a good number of times, and some of those moments were much longer than the other moments that I looked at it. And I do feel now, after a week of thinking about this painting, I feel closer to it.
Yes, same.
I feel like I have a relationship to this painting.
Same here.
Which really changes how you feel about a painting, or whether or not you care or like or have any thoughts whatsoever about something.
Yeah, I don't think
which is so fun. I was like, oh wow, I didn't know what to expect. Like, how much would I change? How much would my relationship to this painting or abstraction change in this week? And I feel like it's changed quite a bit, which makes me excited for these, like, to continue this, like, project a little bit.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's phenomenal. I had the same experience, because I'm like, if I just saw this painting in a museum, I don't think it would really suck me. You'd be like,
those are some nice colors.
I'd be like, okay, cool, Helen Frankenthaler, good job.
Did you see a teapot initially, by chance?
I see it now that
I know we weren't supposed to be seeing representation, but on my first glance, like, this is one of my earlier viewings. And listeners, please know we are looking at this on our screens, like phone or computer or whatever. So we're not doing this piece justice in the real way.
But there is really high res. Like, we're going zooming.
Like, the Frankenthaler, like, trust or whatever, they have, like, really... high res images. Yeah. So you could really, I spent some time really zooming
these
in
around. These
fucking
drips and the charcoal lines. And, yeah. You know, I didn't see a teapot, and I'm trying not to see things.
No, I'm just saying initially that's what I couldn't
but
not
I
see
saw a rhinoceros.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
You can
see
on the right side in the kind of green area, you could maybe see a horn.
Oh yeah.
And then rhino. Yeah,
but you see this teapot with a face.
Erase that.
But that was, this is, we're just trying to like get used to looking. I think for me, like the second round, I kind of didn't need to see, I didn't see the teapot. I mean, I can still see it if I say it, but like it wasn't something that was like punching me in the face.
No, I started just going into these formal aspects and trying to, I mean, for me, I was really trying to understand how she made it. And so I read a little bit about Helen Frankenthaler and that she had this, what was it called? Soak stain, where she would dilute the oil paint heavily.
Yeah.
Soak stain?
I think it's called soak stain.
Yeah. And she would thin it down with turpentine and then she could put it on the floor and like soak the
canvas. She put the canvas on the floor and then she would have this like bucket that she, I watched a few videos of her working also. She'd have this bucket with the thin down paint and she was using oil paint.
Yes.
Which I was like, wow.
An unprimed canvas. Unprimed canvas. Like, how is this archival?
It's probably not.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, welcome to the world of artists. Like, are they thinking about the archive the moment they start making shit?
Often not.
So it's interesting to think about, like, cause, I mean, because you do see, like, when you look at it, it's like the paint is so thin. And I'm used to seeing canvases where, like, you can see the texture, just, especially for oil paint. Like, you can see the texture, like, pretty significantly.
Yeah.
So it was cool to see that because I was like, is it ink? Like, what is it? Is it tea? Like, there are some, like, some of the canvas had that kind of, like, tea-stained, like the parts that were unprimed, like maybe that's just the canvas getting old. Like it just, there's so many things you don't even necessarily know, like what, how is the piece even aged, right? Over 50 years.
Yeah.
70 years. This piece is really old.
Yep.
Yeah. This, I like that. I like the soak stain feel. Like it was really interesting. And I think the second time I looked at it, it made me really think of, like, not in a gross way, but kind of like bodily fluids.
Whoa.
Or like, you know, a water stain, or like sometimes if blood drips onto something and like on a paper towel and it kind of does that weird little.
Yeah, it bleeds.
And then there's always that like dry outline.
Uh-huh.
It's just interesting to think about that.
Yeah. It does feel like watercolor almost.
Yeah.
Okay. And
the charcoal line was a little bit hard for me. It feels like it still feels a little bit out of place. Like I don't know. I would be curious to hear your thoughts on like why she maybe felt the need to incorporate that.
Yeah, it does feel like she went in after, like, it's, this is just my speculating, but it seems like she did the paint. She poured the paint or whatever.
Yeah.
And then went in with the charcoal.
Yeah.
To kind of firm up some of these shapes.
Right.
And I don't mind it.
You don't mind it. Yeah. I
think it gives it a little more volume. Structure. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's a couple parts of the painting that were just like, what the hell was that? Like that weird
brown half circle.
That weird yellow brown circle.
Like with the red line in the middle of it.
It's just
I like it.
I think it disrupts
because the rest is so pastel.
Yeah, it's very pastel.
And I think the brown half circle is like, no, this is fucking serious.
It definitely makes you like it. I think it makes you consider it more seriously.
Yeah.
The painting.
I agree.
Because you're like, that feels out of place. What is that doing there? Like, it was clearly a very specific decision she made. Right. Yes. It wasn't just like a mistake.
It doesn't seem, you know, that way to
it
me.
It doesn't. And no, it really doesn't. So that is very interesting to me. And I also really love that gray like slash on the left side.
Oh, yeah.
That feels really like, I don't know, something that feels really good about that one. Like in relation, like in that part of the painting, in relation to the blue below it.
It's a very confident. There's
also not a lot of that in the painting. So it's when the yellow, it's like it feels like an exciting moment almost. Totally. Which is weird.
Totally.
And I was also noticing, like, for the most part, the paint seems fairly thin, but then on the right, like the right middle, that sort of blue area is like a heavier.
That seems heavier. More normal. Yeah, yeah. You can see the brush strokes.
Yeah. And so that was kind of interesting to think about, like, what was going on. Like, I couldn't help but think about the artist, like, in making this. You know,
totally.
Like, what was going on in her mind? Like, what does this represent? What does it mean?
This made me like Helen Frankenthaler.
I know.
I never really cared about her that much.
Yeah.
But it seems like she got some shit when she was doing this, that people were kind of saying like, oh, you're just doing Jackson Pollock.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then, you know, and then of course she came
into it. It's so different.
Yeah, big time.
It's so different from his work.
Yeah.
I think it was that she was coming up at a time when probably women were having a hard, like.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, more power to her for just like sticking out, sticking to her like vision.
Stick to your guns.
Stick to your guns. I was reading about it. It sounds like she was like the summer before she made this painting, like a few months before, she was like on vacation somewhere and she was out of her studio, so she could only make small paintings.
Yeah.
And then when she got back to New York, she made this painting and it was like clearly like, get me the fuck, I need to get big, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
This piece is like 7 feet by almost 10 feet.
That's huge.
So it's really fucking big. So for us to be looking at it on these tiny screens is like,
where is it? I want to go see it.
You know, it's not here. I did look that up, but I can't remember where it
is. Probably New York or something.
No, it's not New York. I want to say like Texas or something.
No shit.
It's on long-term loan somewhere.
We could drive to Texas.
Here. Oh, wait, Washington, D.C.
Oh, that's Texas. Far.
It's at the National. It's at the National Gallery of National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C.
You want to go
on extended loan?
It's like a 5-day drive.
No, but maybe someone out there on the East Coast can go check it out for us and give us a little feedback.
Yeah,
if you're
in D.C., please. Okay. Well,
I was also just gonna say, so she was influenced by like Cubist work and like some of her earlier work. You can see like really see that influence, which is interesting. It was interesting to see like her trajectory from like Cubist, Surrealist, not Surrealist, but more Cubist forms to this work.
Yeah. You really went all in on it.
Well,
this.
So did you. Give us more.
I don't know.
One thing about her work, it actually, maybe because we've talked about Solowit a lot. I know they're very different. Uh-huh. But the way you apply Solowit's ink stain with the sponge or the rag, it made me, I watched some videos of her and she's down there with like sponges and rags. Like she uses big brushes too, like for maybe more of the splatter, but she's kind of like, she's really in it.
Yeah.
Like her hands and body are like in that
painting.
And just thinking about how big it is, like it is encompassing her too, which is sort of, I don't know.
We've really got to see it at full size.
It just feels like a really physical painting. Yeah. And it's impressive because she made such big work.
Hell yeah.
Apparently.
After crawling
this
around.
This is sort of like the early, like the beginning of her like big work series.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. What's the deal with the yellow brown triangular round shape?
Yeah.
Where do you think she started the painting?
Well, hang
can you
on.
Tell?
Let's take a look.
I can't tell those sorts of things.
Let's take a look. Well, if I'm right in my speculation that the charcoal came last.
Yeah.
Then I don't know. I'm wondering, like, the darker blue is so dominant.
Yeah.
I'm wondering.
But
I don't
think that's poured.
Yeah, I have no idea. I have no idea.
It's interesting.
Yeah, maybe the blue came in. So maybe last was the charcoal or somewhere towards the end.
Towards the end.
And then the blue also comes later.
I think
later.
That blue, that heavy blue is a little bit later too.
Yeah.
Because I think that's where you can tell throughout she has like heavier strokes in there, like more saturated color.
Yeah.
And those feel like a little bit later, you know, like that little area, like that little
for
dark
sure.
blue within the lighter blue.
Yeah, in the bottom middle.
Yeah.
And then I'm wondering if the kind of more pastel green, blue, and red were maybe where it started.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no idea.
What's interesting also about this, considering it's this, what do we call it? Pour, what did you call it?
Soak stain. Am I right on that? Let me look at
it. I think you're right. Is that there's very little.
It is soak stain technique.
Like I feel like there's very little layering. Like the paint.
On this piece?
Yeah. They have distinct areas, which I think is, considering it's soak stained, it's surprising that there isn't
that
more
they're not
like
bleeding
overlapping
into
bleeding
each
into each other.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting too. Like,
that's weird.
How did she do that?
Yeah, that is weird.
You know?
For sure.
It's interesting.
I
super
like
interesting.
All the splatters.
Yeah, the splatters are fun. Those are great. You can tell she had a brush with that and was sort of
she
like just coming onto
going
the onto
off.
The.
Do you think that doing a feminist reading of this is actually sexist?
Kind of.
Because it's like, yeah, she was a woman, but who cares?
You know, I was going to say, like, there's earlier when I was walking home, when I was leaving, actually, I was like, we could point out all the men she knew or were in her circle.
Yeah.
But I was sort of like, no, I was like checking my own like inherent patriarchy as I was
sure.
thinking about that.
Yeah.
Because she knew some people who could have been quite influential, but it's sort of like, who cares?
Internalized.
She knew
misogyny.
Some men, who cares? You know, like that's all. I was like, I decided if we talked about it, it would just be like, there would be no names.
You couldn't
and no,
avoid
like,
it.
You can't avoid it.
Yep.
She, this is her unique style, like
oh, yeah.
approach to painting.
For sure.
No one can take that away from her. Like, you can say all you want about Jackson Pollock, it's distinctly different.
And I feel like her, the sensitivity, like, that's what I like about it. I feel like there's so much consideration and sensitivity in this painting. I don't know how Pollock even enters the conversation other than they both worked on the floor.
I think they were friends.
Well, for sure. Yeah. But I mean, like, just in terms of, like, looking at it. Okay, Maysoon. Okay, what else? Okay, are we, is that, is there more to say on the Helen Frankenthaler painting?
One of my later comments was like, it feels familiar now, like warm, exciting, welcoming, and playful. I was thinking about it.
How did it,
what and there was is your... a feminine, like a more feminine kind of feeling to it, but I don't really know what that means.
Yeah, I don't either. If it was painted by a man, I don't know if I would even bring that into the conversation.
Right.
Okay, wait, Maysoon.
Yeah.
So at the end, you were like, this is a familiar friend now. Mm-hmm. What was it like in the beginning?
I think I felt a little bit daunted by it. Like a little, like, not hesitant, but just kind of like, oh, this is going to be hard. Uh-huh. You know?
I just felt like the more I looked at it, the more there was to see.
For sure. I would love to see it in person.
Yeah,
I definitely was like, I want to see this in person.
We got to go.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in the past week and a half that we've been doing this, I've talked to a few people about this project because I'm excited about it. And it's kind of weird and cute and nerdy of us.
Yay.
And I've gotten a lot of like feedback. People are excited about it. Like from, I've mentioned to other painters, which is a little bit scary because I'm like, they're gonna kill us. Oh my god.
Why?
From like other abstract painters. No, just because they, I feel like painters like study this. Well, you study this shit. Uh-huh. I've studied it, but from like an art historical perspective. Uh-huh. You know, I think there's like a little bit of, no, I mean, they're not mad at us, but just sort of,
I think the abstract, I'm gonna be a bitch.
The abstract community.
I think the abstract community was is probably just happy to have any attention at all.
I think that's true. I am sure that's true.
Oh, sorry to the abstract painters.
We talked about, I talked to a friend of mine who is an abstract painter. Uh-huh. And we were, I've talked to a number of friends who are painters and some are abstract painters, but just, I was trying to learn about like, what are the movements in abstraction?
Oh yeah. Well, that's what I was
like,
researching.
Abstract expressionism, you know, there's the
neoplasticism.
Yeah. There's all these different styles of abstraction.
Yeah.
There's, I think op art is a part of abstraction.
Sure.
And there's like the color, I can't remember, there's color field or geometry, like we're using more geometric shapes. Uh-huh. And so there's all these different movements. And then like eventually I was sort of like, is everything abstraction? I had this like moment where I was like, I think everything is abstraction because it just felt like everything could fit into it.
Get there.
Painting is abstraction. Even if it's realist, even if it's your painting.
It's still fucking colors
and
shapes.
It's actually just colors and shapes. It's not the thing. It's never going to be the thing.
Now
it's
we're getting into semiotics.
So it was just,
semiotics.
I know. It was so fun to like think about that. It's like, oh, what are we even talking about? Like, what isn't abstract, you know?
Galaxy brain. You went off.
I went off. It was fun. I hope to go off more. I have like a reading list. I have all sorts of things.
Okay, let's put out some readings that people, maybe this week, instead of looking at a painting, we're going to give you a reading.
No, we're looking at a painting.
Okay, well, look. Well, look at,
I've got a list. I have a
painting.
List.
No, I have a painting.
No.
I do.
Wait. You have to discuss it with me first.
Okay.
Who
right
is
now?
It?
Well, hang on.
One, we're only doing women.
Yes.
Okay,
it's a
one.
Woman. Yeah.
Two.
Or non-binary people.
Fine. Great.
Okay. Or agender.
All of that's great.
Yeah.
We're just not doing
no
men.
Straight cis men.
Cis men, sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Maysoon, can I tell you what I got into this week?
Wait, is this related?
Yeah.
Okay, good, of course.
Okay, so I was really getting into Mondrian and all these, the constructivists in Russia. Okay, so there were these three movements that all happened at the same time and were all like super samey, but they weren't really communicating with each other at the beginning. So it's really bizarre to me that you had people in Russia and people in Holland like basically on the same mission and like the paint, you can see the similarity in their work. Like,
yeah.
Okay, so there were the constructivists, which they were in Russia in 1915.
Right.
And that was kind of Vladimir Tatlin and Alexander Rodchenko. And it was very much inspired by industrialization.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not my
then
favorite.
You got the Dutch distill painters that included Mondrian and Theo van Doesburg. That was in 1917. Mm-hmm. And then you have suprematism with Malevich, who was fucking crazy. Who did the white on white square painting.
Weird.
And that was in 1913. And also the distill people were also into neoplasticism, which was just like the new way.
Okay.
So while I was on this mission of understanding this extremely minimalist geometric work, I found out about Marlo Moss, okay, who was a butch dyke back in the day. And you can see, I'll put pictures of her in the underworld. Okay, so this is my vote. You can veto this.
Well, let's just, I'm okay to do Marlo Moss, totally unknown probably for most of our listeners. Absolutely. And for you and I, for sure.
And she was kind of obsessed with Mondrian, so her work looks a lot like his. Mm-hmm. And I think she was trying to befriend him. I was reading a biography of Mondrian, and basically I think he kind of kept a distance from her. He was a little weirded out.
Oh my God.
And he would just call her Miss Moss.
Oh, well, that's fine. That's respectful.
Okay, so this butch lesbian who had a girlfriend and everything in fucking... So the painting I want to look at is her painting called Composition in Red, Black, and White. It's from 1953.
Okay.
Okay, so that's my vote for the painting. Wow,
we're just 1 year after Helen Frankenthaler. Where is this? Where is Miss Moss?
They were in France. Okay, so we're in Europe. I think she had to flee during the war and ended up in England.
Okay.
Okay, so that's my vote for what to look at.
You know what I think we should do, Kate, is I have a whole list of women artists that we...
I think this is going to be so challenging to look at, though.
I'm cool with this. Like, let's just do this for this week. Okay. And then I'll share my
list.
Maybe
we'll come into more contemporary
people. Can I share my list with you? And then we can figure out.
Amy Silman.
Amy Silman's on there. Great one. Howardina Pindell.
Oh, Howardina Pindell. We'll do that next week.
Atel Adnan, maybe. Oh, absolutely. Or Samia Halabi, who is a Palestinian artist who I learned about because her show got canceled. She's an older, these are older women, like in their 80s. Uh-huh. Let me share my list with you, and I'll highlight which ones I would be really interested in talking about at some point in our 10-week session.
Great.
And then we can figure out what to do.
Yeah.
And which paintings. I mean, I think it's also like, which painting do we want to do? Like, I think it'd be good to look at a variety of paintings.
Like, okay, painting can I styles. Read you a couple chunks?
Chunks, yes.
I've got some chunks of readings that I was looking at.
Okay.
What reading should we give the listener?
I don't know. If you had good ones.
Well, there's a whole ass book.
No. We're not doing whole ass.
Just the introduction.
Listen, if we're gonna do readings for listeners, it's got to be like 2 to 5 pages max.
Tight, tight, tight.
We can't be giving people 20-page readings. I'm not gonna do it.
Okay, look. There's a good book that with an introduction. The book is called Talking Painting with David Ryan. It's contemporary abstraction, so it's recent.
Okay.
Do you have it? It's actually free online.
Oh, great!
And I'll put a link in the underworld.
But of just the reading section.
We'll just read the introduction.
How long is it? Who is this guy? Is he legit?
He seems legit. I think that
you've never read him before.
It's very academic. Ugh. But I think it's interesting.
But you've never even read him before? Aren't there people we should be reading who are like known entities?
Well, this guy did some good shit. I just really like, he goes in on the contemporary art world and how it's kind of abandoned painting. And he kind of goes in on
that. It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why, isn't that kind of why I feel like that's sort of why we're doing this.
Yeah. I have a long chunk that I could read, but maybe we don't have to.
Why don't you read a little bit?
I have suggested elsewhere that the art world's distaste for the visual as opposed to the verbal is a function of its fear of beauty and preference for that version of the sublime that may be assimilated to the condition of the discursive.
What? I got stuck at the like visual versus written because I think that's already wrong.
Well, I think
way too broad of a statement.
I think he's going into like the in contemporary art, how much we put on concept and that everything needs to have this conceptual underpinning that can be discussed.
Definitely.
And that the discussion of the art is more important than the art itself. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think, and then he really pops off on that.
I agree with that, but I feel like the way he wrote that does not say what you just said. So when we were talking about writing, write more clearly.
I don't know. He goes into postmodernism. I don't know. I thought it was pretty good. Okay, what about a quote from Theo van Doesburg that I really liked? Okay, ready?
Sure.
Since all preceding schools of painting have proved that the spirit of beauty does not lie in nature, but in the eye, not the eye like in your face, but the eye as in me, the individual. Now that painting in all its various expressions from Giotto to Cezanne has demonstrated that all beauty is in the eye, that the eye is all emotion, and that beyond the eye nothing can exist because all being exists only in relationship with the eye. Now the time has come to develop from this eye a new style. As soon as this eye becomes the general universal eye instead of the individualistic or the rationalistic one, the new style will be a general style. What I love about the neoplasticist whatever shit and all these guys that were doing this really like minimal abstract painting, is how much they thought this was gonna fucking be the last frontier. Like, this was gonna solve not only painting but like existence. And I think that's so killer. Like, obviously it didn't necessarily work.
Do you think every movement has that kind of ego behind it?
I think, well, I mean, ego for sure. Like, I can't deny that.
But I mean that ego of like, this is the final. This is the best.
This is it.
The pinnacle.
We got to the end of the road and we found it.
Yeah.
And I mean, real talk though, Maysoon, I'm kind of like on board with that they did. And everything since then has been kind of like eclectic and taking all these things that that already existed in abstract painting and doing kind of a mix. Because like, I don't know, man, I think Mondrian and those guys fucking solved it.
Was Mondrian a neo, what do you call it, plasticism? Plasticist?
Yeah, or the distill.
Distill.
Yeah, the Dutch distill. We're doing it while these Russians were doing the same shit.
Yeah.
The Russians were a little more like power.
See, this is when I think it's important to like see what's happening across around the globe.
Yes.
Like if there is actually some weird psychic cosmic tie, you know.
Ooh, lordy.
Like if you look at like the 60s, there were political movements happening all over the place. Like it wasn't just like in one place, you know, which I would imagine art movements or movements of any kind have a similar pattern.
Well, we got 1950 with Marlowe Moss. We're going to go into composition in red, black, and white. 1953. I'll put a link in the underworld.
I love that. It's just see, it'll be interesting to look at that in relation to Helen Frankenthaler. Right, they're in the same time frame but totally different worlds.
Oh my,
different influences
completely. Can I give one more quote from Mondrian?
Yeah, from Mondrian himself.
Yes.
Oh, cute.
As a pure representation of the human mind, art will express itself in an aesthetically purified, that is to say, abstract form. The new plastic idea cannot therefore take the form of a natural or concrete representation. This new plastic idea will ignore the particulars of appearance, that is to say, natural form and color. On the contrary, it should find its expression in the abstraction of form and color, that is to say, in the straight line and the clearly defined primary color. When we learned about this stuff in school, my professor was like, that he basically felt like the geometric abstraction that he was making was like you pull off
the mask
of reality to reveal something more essential, and that's what he was making. I just think like reach for the stars. I fucking love that.
It feels kind of far-fetched, but okay.
What we also have a video of Amy Silman with Helen Molesworth and this other historian lady.
We do.
Did you watch that?
No.
It was called like How to Look at Abstract Art.
Oh, did you send it to me?
I think so. They're looking at,
I looked at a couple of videos of like art historians or museum curators talking about looking at abstraction, and it kind of annoyed me actually.
Ooh, why?
I just feel like it took too much of like this, I don't know, this academic approach, which I was like, I don't know if that's what it's about. It just annoyed
me.
Go on. I just kind of,
well, that's why this video.
I think that's why I then moved to just looking at videos of the artists talking about their work or making their work as a way to sort of just shift from how
I
was looking.
I feel the same. But this video, it's called How to Look at an Abstract Painting. They're looking at, so it's Amy Silman, Helen Molesworth, and this other art historian. And they're looking at paintings by Joan Mitchell.
Oh, yeah.
And Amy Silman is fucking killing it because she's
an
actual painter.
Let's do an Amy Silman, Joan Mitchell comparison. I mean, it's Wednesday. We're recording on Wednesday, so we need to be talking about Miss Moss on Saturday. We've got 3 days to do this.
Yes, and it'll be easy because there's not much to see.
Okay, amazing.
But you gotta
then
be.
Then we can do Amy Simon, Joan Brown. Sorry, Joan Mitchell.
Folks, you're gonna look at Marlo Moss 5 minutes a day every day. Play a song, do what you need to do, but you need to zone in. Okay, it's gonna be tough too. I want to put this video down in the underworld though, because I thought it was a great insight. Because Amy Simon is the actual painter, and she really, like, they really butt heads with how they think about the work.
I love that.
And I think, to me, she's the one with the most relevant stuff to say.
I think that's why I didn't like the curator talking about it, because I feel like they have this approach of, like, I know, like, the way that they have to be in the world.
Yeah.
Is like, this is what we know. This is what's known. And I just don't think approaching art in general should be that hard-lined in some ways.
Yeah.
And I think a painter or an artist would not be that hard-lined in a lot of ways around their own work, you know?
Sure.
It's probably constantly evolving in some ways.
Have you ever heard Alicia McCarthy talk about her work?
Yes, I have.
The way she talks about it is very abstract.
It's very abstract.
And circuitous. But when other people talk about the work, yeah, it's very concrete.
Yeah, and I think that is like a...
You're nailing down a butterfly. You're trying to catch a rainbow in a jar.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I just don't know what good that does to...
Makes it more consumable.
What is that really doing? Like, I don't think that's actually helping us.
No, fuck off.
You know what I mean? Like, forget, like, art as consumer, like, let's not. Hell no. As a consumer good. Like, let's not do that.
Damn right.
And I think I feel like I fall into that trap sometimes as a curator or someone who works in museums and has to talk about art.
To, like, simplify.
Simplify to try to make it mean something so that people walk away with a feeling or an idea or something. But it's like, how can we actually shift the way we talk about art to be... I don't know.
I think it just has to be more questions. I went on a tour at...
Yeah, but people don't like questions. That is actually the real... That's like the proper approach.
Yeah.
Is to ask people questions about work. And sometimes you start with a formal approach so that people know they're not wrong. Like, what colors do you see? Like, you know, you can... Things that people can answer without feeling like, oh, I'm an idiot. I don't know.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. I went on a tour at LA MoCA once. And
let's go on a... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, let's go on a tour.
SF MoMA has docent tours, and they're supposed to be doing, like, when I work
there... More interactive.
More interactive, asking questions, not just giving... Like, the docents are well-studied, like, they've done the research, but they don't lead with that. They add later. They want really people to engage first, because so much about understanding artwork is through, like, engaging with it or engaging with others in conversation.
And just taking the time to really open yourself up to it.
Yeah, so maybe we should go on a docent tour at a museum in the Bay Area.
I love it. I think we should go to Washington, D.C. I won't fly.
Okay, so
we're driving
for us.
Can we? Let's get a grant.
Let's get a grant,
like,
for this
20
project.
Grand could get us to D.C.
Is this a book? Is this a podcast series?
Yes.
Is this a
television show?
Oh, a traveling TV, a traveling
You would
television
never do
show.
That. You would never do that.
Well,
you wouldn't even let me be go in. You wouldn't let me. You wouldn't even be in a video for me.
I know.
Just
small time
potatoes.
Little Kate.
Yeah. You're going to go on fucking CBS now?
Not CBS.
You're going to be on fucking.
I always thought we should have done like a, what is it called? CCTV. What is it?
Oh, like a public access
public
show.
I think it would have been really funny.
We have a lot of dreams.
So what if we did I can't. I'm so bad at this. All the ideas just die on their way. Ugh.
Speaking of dying ideas, I'm sad that you didn't care more about Mondrian and all this stuff.
It took me, you know, like, you need to give me a heads up so I can, like, look into it a little bit myself.
But I'm telling you.
I know, but it didn't strike me. It didn't strike me the same way.
But it's, wait, let me show you a picture of Marlo Moss, okay?
Well,
you
got to
keep in
Moss.
Mind, this is at the fucking
Ms. Moss.
Turn.
Ms. Moss.
This is the turn of the century.
I'm excited.
Okay? Look at this butch lesbian.
Oh, she looks like Marcel Duchamp.
She was a fucking drag king.
She is amazing.
And shit
wow.
like that.
This is very Mondrian inspired. Cool.
Yeah, that's the thing. And there was a show where somebody came and they thought.
She is adorable.
Yeah. I'll put pictures down below.
God, well, she's very classy looking.
Yeah. Get on congratulationspinetree.com to see all these images.
Let's post. I love her. Should we co-post about the next lesson?
I want to buzz all my hair off.
Are you gonna like? Are you gonna try to read in her lesbianism into the painting?
Well, I mean, is that even possible? Like, it's a bunch of fucking rectangles. How do we find the this when you're looking at this painting? Okay, I want you to find the lesbian part of it.
I mean, it will be really hard to do. I don't know if we'll find it. What is she thinking? How interesting.
I know, right? But everybody was buying into this idea that, like, this way of painting is the final way. Like, this is the truth.
It's very cold.
You think it's cold?
Yeah.
What about the, when sometimes there's yellow?
I feel like it's nothing. Like, Frankenthaler feels not, like, it's so, oh, they're Frankenthaler's so different. Like
playful,
it's
so gestural. Different. Yeah. Yeah, this shit is, it is calculated.
It's quite cold. It's beautiful.
I think you're going to find,
see, I mean, this is my immediate read, and I will be curious to see how it changes in the next 4 days.
Okay, ready for
it'd be great to get some, like, listener, like, involvement, participation.
Yes, give us a call. Okay, point is, we're going to look at a painting. We didn't give them a reading.
I don't know if we should.
We don't have one. I'll put a link to this book if you want to check it out.
I don't think we should, because it's so much about, it's so experiential for us. Like, it's so much, like, it's, there's a whole, I don't want to do ratings, I don't think.
At all?
I don't think so.
Just suggested. I'm putting suggested ratings.
No, because if you're, readings or ratings?
Readings.
Oh, okay, fine. I thought you wanted
to. Oh, you want to do ratings?
No, I don't.
I give Helen Frankenthaler absolute 11 out of 10.
But I don't want to do ratings.
I love her now, and I love Kandinsky now. I think just, I don't know if there's work. I mean, okay, that's not true. I was going to say, I don't know if there's work that if I really invested in looking at it and caring about it, that it would, that like any work would grow on me if I give it that time.
You're saying you don't know if there's work or there?
I feel like, well, I was going to say. Is there
work that wouldn't grow on us?
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of terrible work.
Should we look at one of those at one point?
Sexist, misogynist, like fucking, you know.
No, I'm talking about abstraction.
Gauguin and Tahiti.
Yeah.
But I would say in general, I think just opening yourself up to work in this way, you're going to get something out of it.
We have to do at least one episode where we're in the museum looking at something.
Okay, great. How has our relationship to abstraction changed in the last week?
I would say significantly.
In what ways?
Just in the way that I feel so much more open to it than I maybe ever have.
Yes.
I feel like I've gone through phases, but like it's been kind of like a dry spell for me for a while. And
for abstraction? Or?
Yeah, for abstraction, which I feel terrible saying because there's so many. I mean, if I am looking at work, I will look at it and I will have feelings about it. But it's not like I'm not running to it first, you know?
Mm-hmm. But now?
Now I feel like I mean, just because I've had such good conversations with people throughout over the week about abstraction. And there's so much excitement around it, actually. Like,
yes.
There's a lot of excitement around it. And that feels really... Like, I feel like I have gotten on board with the excitement around abstraction.
Now, yes, amazing.
Which is kind of cool.
I love it.
Yeah.
I think one thing we haven't talked about is, like, there is criticism of abstract work that, you know, it's not... Because it's abstract, it's not necessarily making a concrete statement about anything.
Yeah.
And so in that way, people could, I'm not saying this, but I think one critique could be that it supports the status quo and it's more easily commodified because it's not like.
But that's not the artist's problem or fault.
No.
The commodification of it, at least.
Yeah. I think I'm just putting that out there.
I
also feel
like when I see a painting like Helen Frankenthaler, like a woman in the 50s painting on a big fucking canvas.
It is that political.
That is a political statement.
Sure.
People. Like you cannot say otherwise.
For sure.
So I'd like to challenge us in that thinking.
Mm-hmm. To find
maybe as we're looking at the work that we're looking at is like, where do we start thinking, you know, where do we start and where do we end with thinking about what it actually, not what it means, but what it's doing in like a more.
In the context that it's in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because all art is political.
Check We're doing out, great.
Check out the underworld. Congratulationspinetree.com to see all the images and
the readings.
And the readings. I am going to put readings.
Put
against,
readings in there.
Against Maysoon's will.
Just put some good ones in there. I'll try to find some good. I'm going to get some recommendations.
I mean, the biography of Mondrian that I was reading was pretty engaging.
Yeah.
He was a weird shut-in. you know?
It's not surprising.
He was on welfare. Like, he had no money. He was just, like, doing his weird-ass shit in his little room.
Was he... Did he have a family?
You know, let me get back to you on that. Because I kind of started in the middle.
Was he married with kids but a shut-in? Like, probably not, right?
No, he didn't. I don't think he had a wife or anything. At least not in... I was reading about his life in the 1930s and 40s, so... At least in that time, he was alone.
Yeah, interesting.
And, like, barely going out, you know? It's crazy. I love these weirdos.
Wow.
Okay, really good.
He's gotten quite a bit of attention, though.
Mondrian?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's famous, famous painter.
Yeah, like, beyond famous.
Yeah. Is he? He's not the most famous.
He is.
Who's the most famous?
I mean, I would say Jackson Pollock or something.
Oh, Picasso for sure. Oh, definitely Picasso.
I mean, everyone knows. I feel like everyone knows Picasso.
Okay, who's number two?
I feel like everyone knows, like, Matisse.
Sure.
Like, I'm thinking about, like, globally.
Yeah.
Do people outside of America, really, outside of North America,
give a shit about Jackson Pollock?
Do they, like, is there such... I think it's a little bit too abstract still. I think he's
a little too esoteric.
Like, I think if you are studying art or if you are in university anywhere else, like, probably, but, like, Picasso is, like, household name everywhere for some reason.
Yeah, he's, like, almost a cliche.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like...
Sorry to Picasso.
Yeah, I mean, no offense. I feel like someone like Matisse or, like, I don't know who else would be a bigger name than Pollock, probably.
I don't know, man. He's up there.
Is there a list? Who's making the list? How are we determining the list?
Exactly. We need Western-centric.
I know, that's what I mean.
Folks, like, we're going to get out of the West soon. We're going to come to more. I want to look at things that are more contemporary. Okay, really good. Let us know your list, listeners. And I'm going to give the number again. Give us a call. 419-351-6606. Or you can email us. congratulationspinetree@proton.me. Get a hold of us, guys. I want to know where you're at. We are just, like, deep in the trenches right now. I mean, colors, shapes. I think where I'm at with our journey so far is the more I look at stuff, the more I just want to paint.
Oh, so cool. Okay. You know? I love that for you.
Because it's just like, damn, there's so many fucking ways to engage.
Are you interested in, like, trying the stain? What is it?
Not necessarily.
You don't want to try new styles. You just want to paint.
I think, like, working with really thinned oil paint is something I haven't really done. And so, yeah, and working with that transparency. That's,
the transparency is really interesting.
That's cool as hell. Yeah.
Cool.
So I love it. Thank you to all the painters out there. Thank you to everyone listening.
Go painters. Way to just stick it through and keep doing your thing.
God bless. Mm-hmm. And with that, I'm going to say free Palestine and from the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between. This has been Congratulations Pine Tree.